Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. Welcome to another weekly show. We Talk Productions, one of the few black radio network that explores solutions to issues in the black community, presents Black Urban America. And your people that would like to make comments or have a question, you could dial 516-531-9546. That's 516-531-9540. Excuse me, that's 9540 and press 1. Now the lineup. On Tuesday evenings, we have Black Urban America. I'm your host, Kenny Jones. On Wednesday, we have The Cutting Edge with Meshawn Williams. Now I want y'all to say a prayer for Meshawn. Meshawn had came down with the illness and the disease of COVID. So let's keep her in our prayers. And I think she got to stay in quarantine. On Thursday, we have the Port of Harlem with Mr. Wade A. Young. And Saturday, we finish up with Favaka Gull with Carlton Steen. Now, we would like to continue our monthly series with some very serious ladies throughout the country, Sisters of the Underground. And I'd just like to say they bring some very interesting topics. And tonight, they're going to explain their new program, Black August. And we have on the line Ms. Cassandra Cousins from Connecticut and Ms. Chantel Mason. Good evening, ladies. How was your meeting?
It was good. Hello. It was good. I can't complain.
All right. All right, ladies. Well, go right in and explain your program and the issues and what have you. And I turn the show over to you.
Okay, okay. I believe they're on here. Sister Zasada and Sister Zandria are also with our organization. And they bring a different kind of heat. Like, we always like strong women, you know, with their own perspective. And I feel strongly that they represent that well.
Yeah, so. 5120. Mm-hmm. Who's this? Well, I think it's the other one of your sisters. I don't know where she is. 5120?
That's Chantel.
5120. Yep.
That's okay, ladies. Go ahead. Take it. Take it.
Oh, so I'm really excited, as you can see, about the new program. It all falls under the umbrella of Sisters of the Underground, but we really want to build a self-contained network, especially with women. And so we opted to start developing like a healing program. So our sister Zandria in North Carolina is now working on a drug program. And so we are definitely ready to build that,
Hold on. So one of you guys got a lot of feedback in the background. Can you turn down the TV or radio? Somebody got a lot of feedback in the background. I need to turn that down because it's interfering with the show.
You know, somebody got a music phone. I can hear it, but I don't know what it is.
Okay. You may go.
Okay. Okay, so I was saying I'm really, really excited, as you can tell, for these two programs to come into fruition. So Sister Zandria in North Carolina is working on our drug program. So a lot of times, you know, we do deal with trauma, sex trafficking, missing persons. We deal with all of that. But guess what? Along with that comes people abusing drugs, self-medicating, and we don't ever address it. We never address why someone is so strung out on drugs. They didn't just wake up one day and say, hey, let me try this out. Something brought them to it. So maybe if we create a space where we can be honest about our shortcomings, misgivings, whatever it is, we can get into a more healing space. And Sister Zandria has her own experience and a lengthy record of being clean and doing good community work. So who better to head it than her, someone who's been there?
Which one of you, Sister Sandra? Is she on the line?
I believe she's calling in. I think she's on the line. I can't tell who's on the line.
Is this you, Sister Sandra? Hello?
I can't tell.
Peace. This is Sister Zafira.
I'm
out. On the line.
I'm out.
Okay,
I'm out.
Hello? All
hello.
Right, Sister Sandra, go ahead.
I'm Sister Zandra. I'm located in Charlotte, North Carolina area. I have 11 years, 6 months, and 4 days clean.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I'm very involved in a narcotics anonymous program here in the Charlotte area. I have a sponsor. She has 35 years clean.
Mm.
I worked steps. She worked steps. She got a sponsor. Matter of fact, this weekend, we're going to Sheridan, Illinois, to be with her sponsor for the weekend and be with other recovered addicts who have substantial clean time. And one of the things we've been discussing is, if you know about Narcotics Anonymous, you know they have open meetings. And an open meeting is a collective of experience, strength, and hope is shared. And we help each other stay clean just one more day. And what we've been talking about is trauma. A lot of the trauma that takes place and that happens is, a lot of times what happens is people turn to drugs or some other form because of molestation, rape. You can be molested, rape, or you can be bullied in school, or you can be trying to be with the in crowd. And, you know, the in crowd consists of smoking crack. Some of them may smoke crack. Some of them may pop pills. Some of them may smoke weed, you know. And people need a safe place where they can come and share freely without being judged for being an addict. Right now within the community, being in drug treatment or even being labeled as a drug addict is stereotyping and things of that nature. Narcotics Anonymous is a very good program. It has changed and impacted my life. To the point where I am right now. Churches and things of that nature will tell you, you don't need a program. All you need is Jesus. For some, that holds true. For others, you need a little bit more. You need people just like you who have had the experience. And I could have a neck of light. If you don't have the experience, people want to hear from people who has experience. Even the one that do have the experience, most of them don't know that they're addicts. It's sexual, being molested and raped and sexual abuse, mental abuse, physical abuse. All that can lead to doing drugs and possibly have a sex addiction. I don't even know. Speaking from my own experience, and don't even know it. It's more than just the sex trafficking. And you know that's like this area is number one in it, but it's more to it than just having sex with someone. And that's all I have.
So why would you said that a person like to be counseled by someone that have experience? Why is that? Why is that so important?
Because what I find, this just being my own experience of me being, and this has nothing to do with a Muslim, and what I find to be going on in the masjid is that they do a lot of research on topics, and they do not have the experience. You make it reach someone and say it to someone just by your experience, your story alone. That's just my belief. Sometimes not, you can have all the research and information and you can't reach the person because you have no experience in it. How you going to tell somebody something you have no experience in it? You're just going by your research you did.
That's
just me. I'm just one person. You know what I'm saying? That just because it took somebody who has experience to be able to tell me, like, you ain't got to live your life like that. I done been through the same thing. You know, just listening to someone's story can possibly, you know, help somebody else.
So do you think that these treatment programs are effective?
I can only go by my experience. The treatment program I was in, which is a change now, but the treatment facility that I was going to back then, it's not the treatment facility, it's the person. Like they told me years ago, the only way I could accumulate this amount of clean time is if I do it for myself. I couldn't do it for my kids or nobody else. I had to want this to do it for myself. And so treatment facility is not the treatment facility fault that people leave and go back and use. That's a choice they made. Some people just ain't ready. So to answer your question, because I graduated from a treatment facility, been clean, even though I had to go back to the same facility I left years ago. To answer your question, no. It's up to the individual. When the individual is ready to get help, treatment center may be a good fit for them. It may not. Everybody don't have to be in a structured environment. Some people can just come off the street and get clean. And stay clean, don't have to have a 12-step program. They just need somebody to talk to.
So why do you think, come on ladies, jump in, this is your show. Why do you think that, why do you think the rate of relapse is so high? I still hear the TV in the background. They really got to cut that TV down, please.
That might be me, I don't know. But, the weight is high is, like, I don't know. I never really pay attention to the numbers in the weight. Because, like I said, it's up to the individual. If they want to get help and they want to stay clean, that's a personal choice. This pandemic is hard from my own experience. It's hard for some people, especially if they have underlying issues and they never really dealt with their issues at hand. Then they may relapse. I can't answer that question why numbers are high like they are as of right now. You know,
I believe coming from a family that has several addicts from way back during the heroin days to when they jumped to the crack and all that, just speaking on my family, they was fighting a lot of demons, and those issues were never, ever being brought up. Because I eventually started going to counseling and AA meetings with my mother because I wanted to try to understand, because, you know, as the family starts telling you, you know, you got to leave them alone, feed them with a long-handled spoon, and just quit dealing with them, ignore them, don't help them. But to see your loved ones out there suffering, I started going to the classes trying to figure out. But they ain't never identified this stuff that these people is fighting with internally. So to me, I feel like a lot of them, it just takes when they get tired, they'll stop.
That's true,
what
too. Does that That's mean? Very true, too.
What
like,
does
for
that
example,
mean?
Well, I have a relative who doesn't want to quit. She said she likes what she does. She has no intention
mm-hmm.
of quitting. So it's pointless to kind of say, hey, you can do better. When she's been clear to me that this is where she wants to be, you know? So sometimes
mm-hmm.
that is the issue. Oh,
so what makes a person tired of using? Or,
you know,
or
that, no.
is,
they
is,
that,
why
would
a person want to continue to use, why would a person want to continue to use where everything around them is being destroyed? Family, job, self-perception, lack of progress.
You know, nobody's never said, like, they just always just said they just got tired. And nobody's never said, really, I would have to ask that to some family members and see what exactly was the last straw, like after losing everything.
Well,
what I see here in Connecticut is a lot of overdosing. That I think for some people, even when they want to quit, they still do it when the risk of overdosing is there. So I don't know why that's happening, but it's a thing here.
Just going, yeah. And then, too, this stuff is not made like how it used to be made, you know. You know, it's a lot of more deadly chemicals they're mixing it with to cut this stuff up to make it be a more quantity.
Well, let me ask y'all this. Oh, okay. Joan Shakur, that's you on the line?
Yes, sir, I'm here.
Okay. Well, you have your crew here. Take it away with them. We're just having a conversation about relapse, why people are using, and what have you. So, lady, this is y'all's show. Y'all can have the conversation.
Yeah, so I was able to listen to just maybe the last 2 or 3 minutes there. And, you know, what I believe is that no one has ever actually taken the time to address what caused them to actually go into addiction. There has to be some sort of mental illness that caused them to go there. And until we address that underlying issue, we can't really ask the question, why are you doing drugs? Because we all know that when you actually go into that area, you're trying to cope with something else. You're trying to overshadow what is actually bothering you. You're running from something, if you will. And that is
you're
what
running
causes
from a,
them to actually
you're running
go
from
into
a feeling
addiction.
Or you're running towards a feeling.
I mean, in the black community,
both.
It could be a multitude of things. It could be lack of resources, lack of job. You know, we all know that we are still traumatized and battling things that go as far back as slavery. You know, we don't have the resources to actually give to people in our community as far as making sure they have mental illness address it and cope with it. We're basically teaching them Band-Aids by giving them the different programs that, hey, come here and talk about it. But we're not really giving them the correct skills to overcome it. And so that is what leads into the relapses. That's my belief.
And then also, it's our people are not helping our people, because how can an Hispanic or a white person come and help me overcome? Not saying that it can't, but how can they help us overcome what's going on in our neighborhoods when they don't live in our neighborhoods to even understand the trauma and how far it dates back?
I never could understand that.
I absolutely agree with
you. You know what? Yes, I'm going to say this.
I never could understand why we get... Go ahead. I'm sorry.
With a Hispanic or Mexican person, they could be no experience the same situation we have. We just never know. We're looking at it because they're Hispanic, Mexican, Latino, whatever their nationality is. They may be went through the same thing, just a different phase.
Yeah.
We'll never know because we're not giving them a chance or opportunity, but we'll never know what they experience, because they experience sex trafficking. They may be experiencing racism because they experience Latino, Mexican, or whatever that race is. We'll never know. We just focus on us because we're hit the hardest.
That's kind of why I said,
yes, everybody, whites, Hispanics, blacks, Asian, they all experience child molestation, all that, but it's just the underlying issue. It's kind of like you have an underlying issue that's never been, well, that was just addressed to certain people, and then you keep continuing this trauma. I just think it's different. I just think it's just a little different.
It really is different because it's different because we hit different. We react and respond, and we handle situations different than the way they do.
Right.
You know, the truth is we all have, every race have their things that they have suffered. No one has ever suffered to the magnitude that the black race has. So absolutely,
right.
We all have different things. We may have some things in common. However, again, the resources available to those individuals outweigh the resources that are available to the black community. You could go back as far as reparations. Every race has at some point been enslaved, but they also all receive reparations except for the black man and the black woman. So that argument, I hear that all the time, and it's like, we can't just say, well, they fight the same fight we don't. They really don't. They really don't. Because, again, they have multiple opportunities to overcome theirs. We're still battling mental illness all the way that was passed down from us generation to generation from slavery. We have never been given the opportunity to overcome those things that traumatize our people.
Yeah, just from losing our culture, our language, all that. But I do want to say when it was a particular salon that I worked in that I deal with probably 90% white. I used to hear those people come in and say how they went to rehab or they was in rehab. They was coming to get their hair done for maybe a job interview or whatever. But just to hear what they say, their family paid for them to go to these drug rehabs for 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, I don't think I ever heard a black person say they didn't pay $30,000 or their family paid $30,000 or put up their house to put these people through rehab. So it has to be something different in that particular rehab than like the one that my mama went to because she was made to go to, you know. I don't know. Because if one of my family members came and asked me to help them pay $30,000, I'd have to tell them they have to stay on the drugs because I wouldn't have had $30,000 to give them. You know, I'm just saying.
You know,
like, but to just hear them people say that that's what they were spending on their family members, on their kids.
Well, let me ask you ladies a question. How you get the drugs out of the community, or can we get the drugs out of the community? Personally, I think not. It's here.
I don't care what nobody say.
It's been here since I was a child.
Yeah.
Please, this is Asada. I don't know if y'all can hear me.
Yes, we can.
Yes, ma'am. This is a solid
storm. I think they have to burn the city down.
Right, but as far as getting the drugs off the street, I think it's levels that are over that. They make
Absolutely.
These conditions where they drive people to the drugs, like the no jobs,
yes,
no education, no health care, no food deserts. All of that kind of stuff. That drives
and the guns. And the guns. They bring them in the neighborhoods, too.
Mm-hmm. But you know what? I'm an advocate for guns. I don't want black people to put their guns down. I just want them to point them
I
at
don't.
The right person.
No, I don't either. But I'm just saying, as far as bringing the guns in, just giving them to them without the proper knowledge, and that's how, you know, our brothers and stuff start end up killing each other. Because I remember watching documentaries about they were setting them guns in the neighborhoods and they was going over there getting them and stuff.
Yeah.
Because where else would they came from? We ain't manufacturing them.
Exactly. But these other, I think we definitely got to go back to the ways of old as far as this black liberation movement goes. Like, they was the ones pushing the pushers out. We're not doing that no more. We afraid of
absolutely.
Them. We don't have the neighborhood support because we're not village no more. So everybody is thinking individual versus collective. And as individual things has never worked for us. We've always been a people that when we come together, we can make it happen. We have made it happen. We're still here. But we got to get more militant with everything, with ourselves, our spirituality, what we eating, what we're reading, what we listening to in our music, and what we're watching on TV. All of these things are they're also drugs. So we have to be careful what kind we put into our bodies. So I think breaking it down to people to where the average person can understand and where it hits their personal life, because like we said, we've all had experiences with drugs, either in our family or personally. That's no coincidence. It's just not. I'm sure a lot of us on this call, us women, have dealt with either abusive relationships, molestation, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's common.
I think, too, we just not enough of us are going in the communities and just telling our people that they wrong. And that, you know, remember the neighborhood watch and stuff like that? I mean, I just don't think it's some that's involved, but I just don't think that, I read something the other day. It says a lot of women know women who got raped, but why come men aren't saying they know rapists? Nobody's saying anything to them. They just letting it slide because they don't want to get in a confrontation with you know, but I mean, they get in confrontation over some dumb stuff, though.
Absolutely.
Accountability,
exactly.
You know.
I think it's like, well, one of my favorite interactions is when Nikki Giovanni and James Baldwin, and she was telling him that, you know, the black man, you can go to work with this white man and you can fake it with him all day. Like, you could be having a bad day, but you ain't going to project that on him. But you'll go home and project it on your children or your wife. So like she said, I want you to fake it with me too then, shit.
Well,
you're going to fake it with him like you happy and all that. Fake it with me too.
Well,
and
we were taught that happen. Behavior. We were taught that behavior.
Yep. Absolutely.
You know, well, yeah, you showed right about
we
that.
We beat each other up, but we're coming from that, the enemy. Oh, we're very humble, and we bow down. Matter of fact, we'll kiss their feet.
Well, yeah, it was beating, because if you sat there and got 50 to 100 lashes on your back, you had to go back home and act like nothing happened. You couldn't show no emotion. And we taught that into our kids, because I know I did when my boys stopped crying. What you crying for? I ain't let my kids cry.
And that's anti, yep. That's why a lot of our black men are having serious mental breakdowns, because they, all their emotions, they've been holding this as long as they've been alive.
Especially if they're molested, you can't say nothing.
Statistically, if y'all look, please look it up after we get off this call. Black male boys, man, they are molested at a higher rate than us.
They are.
I've heard that a lot of times.
Yes, I believe it.
It's just a whole situation.
Yeah, because
like
I've heard a lot of men.
It's up to the vanguard to get back on the streets and take them back.
Yeah.
You find amongst yourselves.
Repeat that for me.
Yeah.
I say, all to take back your neighborhoods, you'll be fighting amongst yourselves. Are there other alternative ways besides violence to take back the streets?
Absolutely, and I do not mean violence.
When you say vanguard, you mean that you're going to project a military or violence towards whoever is being destructive in your community.
And that, hey, and everybody that looks like us ain't going to be with us, though, at the same time.
That's true.
No violence is going to be against. But just because they got our same color don't mean.
Oh, we always had turncoats.
Yep.
We always
exactly.
had turncoats.
There's always other alternatives. I always say violence is the last one. If we go to, like I said, the candy lady, you know, everybody in the neighborhood. Everybody respects her. If she feeding everybody, if house one gets food stamps, house two get food, let's give it to Big Mama, the candy lady that's feeding all the kids anyway every month, and she don't have to worry about that part.
Yep.
So we can worry about something else. And like we did, like I said, we took our children's education to our own hands, and we've been homeschooling, African-centered homeschooling our children for 9 years.
That's beautiful.
So it's about, like I said, we have to take responsibility
and
to where we lack.
There's statistics that black children perform better homeschooling, Africa Center homeschooling, that is, than the public schools.
Yeah, I believe that.
And, you know, there's no one cookie cut way that we're going to eliminate all the things that, you know, is a hindrance to our community. There's multiple levels and multiple things, and each one of those have to be addressed accordingly. We can't take the same mold to address each issue. We have to address them individually, learn what needs to happen to each phase that, you know, that is causing disruption in our community. And again, like Sister said, everybody that look like us ain't with us. We got to get rid of their asses, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
I say, like I said, that's what's gotten us in trouble a lot of the time. Is we make it easy to infiltrate because we just trust.
Absolutely.
I mean, we are looking people. So I don't, I mean, that's
not a bad
thing.
Yeah, of course. That's all part of the movement. And that's all part of the movement. Somebody was speaking earlier about the Black Liberation Movement. I mean, every black organization, historically, has been infiltrated by people who look like us working for the enemy.
Absolutely. COINTELPRO, they knew what they were doing. They knew as well. Even it being, you know, it's funny, this is a segue we could talk about Black August. You know, it's just,
the reason why these prisoners now aren't as politically educated as they were in the 60s and the 70s is because they took all of them and put them in the shoe, put them in the hole. They've been in the hole for 40, 45 years. Because they know they don't want no more George Jacksons and Jonathan Jacksons and none of them. They don't want none of that.
Political
and they've locked them away. That's why they assassinated all of them. Because
if you could reach one, you could reach a thousand.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
The 60s and the 70s was so much happening as far as, you know, black racial issues. You had the Jim Crow going on down south. Like I said, you had the prison movement going on in California. You have the assassinations of Malcolm and Medgar Evers and Jimmie Lee Jackson and all of these. I mean, it was on fire. And they took all of those people
and they were young.
Like, let us, we don't even have a leader right now. They want to assassinate. That's how bad it is. Like, they took everybody from us, and we scared to step up to the plate.
And you want to know something?
Yep.
I said this last week on my show. Everyone, be careful who you listen to. Because everyone that they put in front of you on that idiot box ain't for you. Every black face that they put in front, be aware.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to put nobody that think like Malcolm on TV. They're not.
Mm-hmm. No, they're not. You're right. You're right about that. Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, ladies. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no.
We're just letting it sink in, the severity of it. You're right.
Yeah. It's a lot. You know, fear tactics has been working for generations. It's been working, you know.
They know that too.
That brother Micah X from Texas, he knew what he was supposed to do. He did his job, and he did it for us. But at the same time, nobody came after him. No one. He had no support from us, no support from, you know, the movement, and nobody. So it's like, why would I put my life on the line for y'all when y'all don't even be careless? You didn't ask how my mom was doing, how my children were doing, none of that. We still got political prisoners that have been in there, like I said, 40 years in the shoe.
Yeah, they're 80 years old. They're 80 years old now. They're 75 years old, and they've been locked up since they were 18. Because, like I said, Black Liberation Movement was led by youth.
They were young.
21 and under.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. It's so sad. And then the crazy part about that is they still didn't break them.
Right.
They still
didn't.
You know, they still couldn't break them. You've been isolated with no windows.
What they
were
doing was right. Yeah.
Ooh,
they felt what they were doing was right. And they was prepared. How many people you know are willing to die? Even the ones that's in the Black Panther Party, the new Black Panther Party, the UP New Gun Club, and all of them, and all these other organizations. How many people you know are willing to die or do 50 years for your people? How many?
Exactly. They took them all.
So then maybe we targeting the wrong ones, because you got some that's willing to not in the party, but you got our brothers out here willing to do all that just for in the street for nothing that they own. So maybe we targeting the wrong ones. That's the warrior type. That's
I don't care what you say about the Bloods or the Crips. If you could change their thinking. If you could change their thinking and behavior,
that's what we need
you
to
got some words
we gotta
for
figure that out.
And that's how we do it. I'm one of them. I'm from Compton. I'm a third generation Crip. But now, like they said, no, I'm not. I wasn't to be messed with then. But for my people, now I'm it ain't no question about it. It wasn't no question back then in my ignorance. So it's definitely no question now in my intelligence.
And
that's absolutely true. Me and Decide laugh about it all the time. We from two different sides of the track and two incredibly woke women now, fast forward into now, you know, when back in the day, we probably wouldn't even speak to each other. absolutely. But though, like I said, we the warriors, and we're the ones. I feel like that's us paying our debt back to society, not being locked in prison, us fixing the communities that we once terrorized. That's how we repay our debt to society.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Try to figure it out. Figure out what it takes to reach them. Because they're, you know, they coming out to the streets every day. And the numbers are just being, you know, too much. Because I'm telling you, I drive around and I just look at the corners and the corner stores. And they just piled out there.
Sometimes
15 of them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about all day early in the morning. I'm going to drop my baby off in the morning. They out there. 7 o'clock in the morning.
They in the house for the summer, and the parents probably have multiple children. It ain't just them. The mom, you know how we back in the day. Y'all get out. Y'all go outside. Y'all look, let my air out. They don't have nowhere to go.
And
they
that's
really
the
don't.
Reason
are
why.
The people out there
and that's the
to
reason
you?
Why we have so much drugs in our neighborhoods and our communities, because of the lack or limited consciousness that they're spearing out by the elders and the adults and the parents.
Absolutely, are we the first teachers? Are we their first teacher? Absolutely. And like me and my husband, elder, Mama Condi, she told us, you have elders and then you have olders. They two different people. Just because you got age on you don't mean you have wisdom. So you may
you
be older.
If
you still stuck in these generational curses and you spewing that out to the children, just like with me. I don't know if y'all ladies grew up like this, but I know I did, where it wasn't no other woman coming in your house, period. Not with your man, not with none of that. Ain't no woman coming in here.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't find my
ain't no man, ain't no husband. Other man coming in here, neither when
exactly.
I'm the man of the crib. I'm the house.
You know,
I was raised the same way. Like, my mother and father, they've been married for like 40-something years. I have never seen any woman come in the house. I have never seen another man come in the house. The only time another man came in the house was when it was his nephew and they had to live here. Other than that, no.
Yeah, a lot of us grew up that. But now, see, I have to break that with my daughter, because a lot of my sisters out here needed help, and now my house was a safe haven. You know, I guess that was a test for me as a woman. Like I said, the way I grew up, you know, I'm like, damn, my ancestors probably looking at me like, oh, hell no. I know you ain't got this going down. You know what I'm saying? Or it was a test for my marriage as well. You know, having another woman in the house or this, this, and that. But that all, it was great. It's been great. We haven't had one issue. And I was able to help break that curse for me, not pass that to my daughter, and I was able to help these other women break curses where another woman wouldn't let you in, even if you needed help. So all of that consciousness is important. Of course, you're supposed to watch who who you letting in your castle and all that stuff, but if it's like that, then I don't need to be around you, though. If I can't leave you with my child and my damn husband, I don't need to be around you at all, period.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Because I live village style. Like, I you can leave your kids with me or vice versa. My husband going to pick yours up from the airport, all that stuff. Like, we do all that.
Right.
Yeah. And we protect each other. When you live like that, you ain't got to think about nothing when it comes to protecting them people. They don't have to think when it comes to protecting you or your children. It's not a question, because we're a family.
Well, how come we don't trust each other then? How come have we been conditioned not to trust each other, or is it in our DNA?
Both.
I think it's both. We've definitely been conditioned.
And reading that book, y'all.
Break that down for me,
ladies.
Break that down for me. Why is it both instead of either or?
I think, for example,
Oh, no, I'm just for example, like,
you know, you come into something, and when one black woman sees another black woman, they can't ever just say, hey, queen, you beautiful. Simple example. We want to size them up, check and see if they shoes real, just stuff that has no relevance to a person's spirit, you know? That's the conditioning. The DNA part is because it is passed down. We've seen our parents do it, our grandparents do it. It's something that has been going on for hundreds of years. And we got to figure out how we're going to stop it. Because I love all my sisters, no matter what.
Is that the slave mentality thinking?
Yep, yes, for sure. I was just going to say that post-traumatic slave syndrome let you know. That book.
Yeah, I know about it.
Man,
I finished that book about 4 months ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know what else? You will also get points on your record if you get caught with that book in prison. It's banned.
Yes.
I never knew that. Girl, let me tell y'all, all them black we were talking about in the 60s and 70s, if you get caught with any George Jackson in your cell, you done. You get caught with any type of black revolutionary book, you done.
I could believe that. The George Jackson letters? I could believe that.
So they just going to sit it off in there and just, you're supposed to just not touch it.
But
so
they know
what
this political education is going to do. They know what that political education is going to do for young black males who have a class consciousness of why I'm in here. That's scary to them white people. Once they figure out that class system and all of that other stuff don't matter and this is systemically set up for me to be here, that's dangerous.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Then you're gonna start uniting across race lines. What George was doing, that's why they had to take him out too.
Yep. You know, talking about the prison, I met a gentleman and he was telling me that, you know, that he did a bunch of time and stuff, but he was saying how he was helping a lot of brothers fill out, you know, a lot of paperwork to get free over just something that they didn't even know that they could just appeal. And he said that the warrants caught him in there and threatened his life if he keep helping people.
Exactly. He's telling
these people they right.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And too many of them was learning, going in there, reading books, reading how to appeal and getting out. He said they threatened my life.
Well, that's going on out
here. I didn't think I was going to come back.
Especially on these platforms, there have been programs that speak a lot about consciousness, liberation, and speak about the enemy and what have you. And they use certain language to describe the enemy. They be threatened of being shut down. So, it's going on out here. And I feel that as long as we acting a fool, trying to do like them, trying to assimilate their behaviors and their looks and their style, we are all right, trying to be like master. But as soon as we want to separate and break away and run away, that's a problem.
It is. And they don't want us here, but they don't want us to leave. That's not like a real abusive relationship.
Because they making money off of us. They making their wealth for generation to generation you know, they've been set.
Exactly. Imagine your boss taking your damn profits and everything you made for 400 years, and you go home with nothing for 400 years.
These folks have been set.
Exactly. I don't know how people don't understand how big of a wealth gap it is.
Yeah.
Because of that, like I told them, you give your look where we work at right now, give them your check for the next 2 months and see where you be at.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't think slavery was for real.
Two weeks.
Exactly.
And, you know, I just had a similar conversation the other day. We were talking about, you know, especially in California, where they use the inmates to fight all of those fires that are out there. They pay them less than nothing, but then they're doing it the whole time they're in there, get out, and still can't even get an actual paying job when they get out because of their laws, have it said. They can't hire felons. So it's designed to make us less than either way it goes. There, and it boils down to, like I said, the resources available. They make it hard. They keep us in economic downfall. It's several layers to how they are doing it. Until we address that, then all the other conversations really shouldn't and cannot be had.
Absolutely. And, you know, that just made me think about something. Because a lot of these businesses, like you said, of course, California, they have a whole complex going on with their stuff. But like Whole Foods, all of these places that use convict leasing, we need to demand that you hire these same damn convicts when they get out because they work for you anyway right now.
And fair wages,
absolutely. We need to demand that in the city anyway, period. Like that's like city council mayor type stuff too. You can't come into our city and set up no businesses if you're not hiring, you know, if you're not giving people a second chance. I just don't understand that.
No, it's a percent of their income go back to the community.
Oh, exactly.
A certain percent. Yeah.
Exactly. You can give them, look, they get some tax cuts right now already. They could just give them a couple more tax cuts and let them hire them. That's just crazy. So, but it's up for us. Like I said, this prison movement won't work without an inside the walls and outside the walls movement. We got to be connected together.
Yeah.
That's the only way they can get
so there. So is there a connection team that keeps, you know, or is this kind of everybody just individually?
That'd be something I'm going to research because I'm not sure yet. But like I said, I know there's a bunch.
Who's keeping up with that?
Yeah, that's something I really want to get into because it's just, like I said, the recidivism is high because of that right there. You have to parole back to the hood that you came from.
Yep.
Which means you still going to get points because that's a parole violation off the top. If you're doing any type of gang anything, that's off the top.
And then it's a whole other level.
Yeah, exactly.
And then it'd be a
so
whole
you're gonna go right
level.
Back. It's a whole, yeah, it's a whole, but like I said, it's so many layers to it.
Mm-hmm.
The onion ain't got nothing on this.
So did we actually get a chance to talk about Black August yet, sis? I got on a little late. Did you get a chance
about
Black August?
We didn't talk about
the last
topic, like segue in there.
We're going to give you the last few minutes here to talk about Black August. So go ahead, take the floor.
Okay. Oh, wow. All right, everybody. Free to land. But, yes, Black August. Black August is definitely a time of reflection, commemoration, and being in solidarity with those fallen soldiers we lost that I talked about, George Jackson, Jonathan Jackson, Katari Galden, W.L. Nolan, all of these people. They died behind the walls. They were murdered because of the same things we're talking about, their political consciousness, their revolutionary consciousness once they got in there. Black August was started in 1979 in the California prison system. And it was on, I'm going to say it was on the heels of Katari Galden being murdered, which August 1st, 1978 was the year prior. And prior to that, there were about seven other murders that were, I know Katari was one, George Jackson was one, Jonathan Jackson, and Cleveland Edwards and Alvin Miller were all revolutionary political prisoners that were murdered just because of that, their political consciousness behind the wall. So we use this month, like I said, to commemorate. We fast. The motto is study, fast, train, fight. We fast every day from sunrise to sunset. We have four flea days where we do a 24-hour fast. And like I said, a flea day is where each day we commemorate one of the fallen soldiers. So August the 1st is Katari Galden. August the 7th is Jonathan Jackson. August 13th is W.L. Nolan, who was murdered January 13th, but they commemorate him on the 13th. And then August 21st, that's when George Jackson was murdered. And all four of those days, we do a 24-hour fast. And we study hard and we train even harder on those days. But as we said, there's still political prisoners there now who were actually involved in these, you know, saw these murders happen right when they were on the yard. So they've been in the hole, like I said, 40, 45 years, and they can still be, you know, written to. I'm going to get that information out there as well. So we definitely need to write those political prisoners and just thank them for their service, first of all. And we also need to campaign to get them out, because a lot of them, like we said, are 80 years old or better. They're, since COVID came, you know, it's running rampant in the prisons. A lot of them have gotten sick with cancer and things of that nature. I know Dr. Matulu Shakur has been sick, and Mumia has been, you know, has been sick as well. So we definitely still can campaign to get them out. Because, like I said, being in the hole that long is just, I don't understand how they psychologically feel there. But they are, and they are still writing and all of those things like that. But this is a very important time, like I said, to be in solidarity with prisoners all over. And to also always commemorate, like I said, the ones that we lost that taught us our revolutionary consciousness that is still, like I said, being, we still read it. We can read it on the outside, but on the inside, they cannot. Like I said, these books that we were talking about, George Jackson's Soledad Brother and Blood in My Eye and Joy DeGruy's book, Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome and The New Jim Crow, all that stuff is like banned for a particular reason. So maybe we can start fighting for that too, to get these political books back in there, because that's where our brothers, I think, are going wrong. They don't have those babas no more, mamas no more to tell them, you know, what the revolution is really about and what it was about and the class consciousness behind it. So our family always looks forward to Black August. Our children, they participate as well. And just whoever we come in contact with, you know, we always make sure we explain it to them and what it's about and why it's important, like I said, to commemorate this special revolutionary time. And August is also, away from Black August, is a time of a lot of uprisings with us Black folk, like the Watts riots, well, the uprisings, anyway. The Haitian, the Boys Cayman Islands ceremony, the Chicago uprising, and we have like the birthdays of Marcus Garvey and James Baldwin. Chocolate
yes,
the Moon,
that's today is Marcus Garvey's birthday.
Yes. So happy birthday to Baba, the Honorable Marcus Messiah Garvey, you know, who gave us our Pan-African flag, the red, black, and green.
That's
so
right.
We definitely got to give him, you know, big ups to him and his whole organization and his vision and what he was trying to do for us. It was definitely before his time, the way he was thinking, you know. And with the technology and resources we have now, we should definitely be able to get something, you know, going. We should have something for Black people that's just Black right now. And we got to get to that. He had a, you know, Marcus Garvey had a whole shift. And yeah, they weren't working with the kind of resources we are now. So he was talking about factories, have our own factories distributing for ourselves, and just the self-determination of Black people, period, that we still have. We just got to tap back into that ancestral power and the power of, that we already have in us. So with that, I'm going to, you know, I would yield, and, if, you know, hopefully that explains what Black August is about.
That's awesome.
Well, I'd like
I've
to thank everyone this month. And, I really enjoy y'all every time y'all come on. I really, really do. It's a very encouraging, inspiring discussions that needs to be taking place every day of our lives. Well, that's enough.
Well, we thank you for giving us the honor.
Yes. You know, thank you. No, honor's on mine. You know, I am honored. Okay, ladies, I'll see y'all next month. All right, folks, I'll see y'all next week. As always, I am because we are because I am. Good night.
Ubuntu and Tao.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials, because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew,
to eat hog maws confiscated from the Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised.